I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Hello, and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you a unique look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 249. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today is Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Happy New Year.
To you, too. I see you're still in your pajamas, huh?
A late day at work. I had to change back into something comfy.
There you go. Well, on today's show, we're going to be answering questions like, how do gray color reducing shampoos work? Is it okay to spray perfume on your hair to get it to stop smelling? Is your foundation making your face turn orange? And can you use body wash as a replacement for hand soap?
Interesting.
But first, let's get to some of that inane chit-chat we're so famous for. Welcome to the New Year's. First time I've talked to you all year.
Well, we're not too far in, so I don't know if that's it. You know, impressive or not, but yeah, it is our first time talking. And I think what I love most about me and you, one of the things I love most is that we're so goal oriented. And I think both for the Beauty Brains and for ourselves, we have some big goals this year, right?
Absolutely. Every year I put together my new spreadsheet, which lists all of my goals, and I use the spreadsheet for tracking. I've been doing this since 2003. So I have this really long spreadsheet of stuff. But I remember last year you had a goal to read 52 books. How'd you do on that?
You know, I did not get to it. And I got pretty far. I read 26 nonfiction books, which I feel pretty good about getting halfway there. But as you know, I have a new venture that I'm starting to the full-time work that I do. And I did read a lot of trashy novels about this detective named Stephanie Plum. So I'm a little embarrassed to admit those. So I didn't post about those, but I didn't get to 52. But I did a lot of audiobooks, did the trashy books, and did 26 nonfiction books. But maybe this year I'll get there. I don't know.
Yeah, last year I got to 75 books, so I was only going for 52. But this year I upped my goal to 70.
Wow.
So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, and actually this book reading project I've been doing since 2005, which was I'm trying to read the 150 greatest books of all time. Because when I started the project, I had only read 14 of them, and now I only have 13 left to read. So.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, but I still have some long ones left, including Ulysses and the Gulag Archipelago, so got some work to do.
Well, I have read Ulysses, so at least I can check that one off my list.
Indeed. But for the Beauty Brains, we've got some goals too. I'd love to. Hopefully, this year we're going to update our website. We haven't had an update on that in a while, so it's a little stale. But that'll be coming. I'm hoping we can improve our Patreon page. And of course have more of those Patreon exclusive events for our subscribers. And of course we always have the goal of weekly episodes. You know, I was looking at,
I would love to get one episode a week. Yeah.
Well, I was looking at last year we did 44 episodes. But the year before we did 35. So we're getting better.
Yeah, it does take a lot of work. As we've discussed before, like we just don't come on always and blindly answer things. We really do take a lot of time to look and research. And, you know, sometimes I'll have 23 different tabs open with different journal articles that I'm trying to go through just to make sure I have all the information to answer a question. And we do a lot of other stuff with our time as well. So we try to keep up and try to answer everyone's questions, but it is tough.
It is amazing about how you can go down a rabbit hole for like a single question, which seems kind of obvious, but things get a little more complicated.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was looking through a lot of the questions that were submitted, and I wanted to give, starting out this year, I'd like to give some tips for people who are asking or submitting questions. Now, we answer as many as we can, of course, but sometimes there are questions we don't get to answer. And Sometimes it's just that we didn't get to it. But there are some other reasons why we might not answer your question. One of those is that we've covered the topic before kind of recently. I know we've gotten a lot of questions about, say, something like vitamin C and skin. And I feel like we've covered that on a few episodes. And it's not that we won't cover a question again, but if we've done it recently, you know, I don't think we're going to cover it. So if you've asked a question that we've recently answered before, you know, we might not get to it for a while.
Additionally, sometimes it just takes more research to answer a question than we have time to do. Going back to what we were talking about a second ago, we want to provide the most accurate and the best content based on reliable scientific data. And sometimes that just takes a ton of time and we don't get to questions right away. And sometimes we just can't get to them at all.
And I would say the third reason is we might not get to your question is that, you know, we just might not have the expertise in the subject. For example, sometimes people will ask us medical questions, which might seem like they're related to cosmetic products, but they're really, you know, something you should be asking a dermatologist. And, you know, we will, if there's like a chemical, a cosmetic chemist angle to a question that's even a medical one, you know, we'll answer it if we have something to say. But if there's, you know, something like, how are you going to cure my eczema or eczema? You know, that's not really what we can answer, right? Now, we love getting questions, of course, and we might answer, you know, anything. So feel free to send your questions, but just don't be disappointed if we don't answer it like right away, or maybe it just takes us a while to get to. I'm thinking of Frank's question that took about a year to answer.
Yeah, you know, but we answered his question. That's the point. I mean,
that's right.
It doesn't matter that the product was discontinued. It took us so long to answer it. We answered it.
We did. And just so you know, we do read and listen to every question that is sent in. And we do have a sort of a priority, like if you're a Patreon or a patron of our Patreon account, then we're going to answer that question. We'll give you some response to that. So everybody who asks through Patreon gets an answer. If you send in a recorded question, we're more likely to answer that. And then the other one, questions, if they catch our fancy or we can answer them quickly, then we'll answer that. But if you want to submit a question, we have links in the show notes, and there's three ways you can do that. But the easiest way is to send us an email at thebeautybrains@gmail.com. And ideally, you record it on your smartphone and send us the audio file. How about some beauty science news?
Ooh, what did you find this week?
Well, this is sort of the end of last year and the start of the new year. And I stumbled on this article that said it was about the 13 beauty products that everyone's talking about in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was thinking, were we talking about them? Or maybe we're nobody. So I thought we'd just quickly go through those. So this comes from InStyle, actually. And the first product they talked about was the Dyson Corral Hair Straightener. Do you hear about that?
I've used it.
Oh, yeah? Any good?
You know, it's a bit clunky. You know, the fact that it doesn't have a cord, sure, that's nice. But I find it a bit of a burden to use and maneuver. It's huge. It has to accommodate that battery. I honestly prefer my corded straightening iron.
Well, it's only $499. It's a four.
Especially for that price. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm good with the cord.
There's the Supreme X Pat McGrath Lab lipsticks. Lipsticks. I mean, I'm sure they're great, but $124 for a lipstick?
Yeah, I lose lipsticks too much to pay that kind of price.
That product was sold out in 8 seconds. There's the Human Race Humidifying Cream. Again, another product I didn't hear about, but apparently everyone else is talking about it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful green package, but, you know, it sells out too fast for us to hear about it. But what's cool is all the containers are refillable and fully recyclable, so that's pretty cool.
And it has squalane in it and snow mushroom extract. Woo!
Just don't eat it.
Or put it on your pizza. Another one was L'Oreal Paris Magic Root Cover-Up.
Hard to believe people are talking about this product. It's been on the market so long.
Yeah. So, you know what? When I was working on Tresemme, we were working on a root touch-up product like this. We never did end up coming out with it because I don't think we have any... We didn't have like a good way to sell it into stores for some reason.
You know, these products are, I mean, they're nothing new, right? Like, this product's been the market on forever. I think, you know, they're saying people are talking about it just because of COVID-19 and you want to touch up your own roots. But, yeah, nothing wow.
Right. Speaking of nothing wow, the CeraVe Hydrating Facial Cleanser.
You know, a lot of people are talking about this because of influencers like Hyrum. They are.
Yeah, well, you know. TikTok is the new Instagram, I guess.
I was just told today that someone, they want someone's 11-year-old to teach me how to use TikTok. And I was like, I will take them up on that offer. Thank you.
Yes. There's the Rare Beauty Soft Pinch Liquid Blush. I mean, it's blush, but Selena Gomez is one of the, I guess she launched it.
Yeah, I heard she was launching something, but I didn't know what it was. That's neat to see what it is. And, you know, it's $20, so it seems like a good price.
Sure. The Fenty Skin Hydra Visor Invisible Moisturizer Broad Spectrum SPF Sunscreen. Boy, can you get a longer name, Fenty Skin? But
it's a very long product name. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Fenty is still out there putting out products, but $35 for this this SPF. So, again, another product I have everyone's talking about, I have not heard about.
This product comes also in a refillable package. It's an airless component, and typically airless componentry is not recyclable because of the mixed plastic that's in it. So anytime you see an airless pump, it goes in the trash. That's pretty much what happens to it. But there is a packaging company who developed a refillable airless container. That's what this one is. And at least you can pop in and reuse the outer container and minimize the waste from the inside, the outside container instead of throwing that away. So pretty neat.
Yeah, very interesting. Charlotte Tilbury Pillow Talk Push-Up Lashes Volume and Lengthening Mascara. I mean, it looks like a mascara, right?
I've heard good things about this one. I kind of want to try it.
Well, somehow they racked up a 45,000 person wait list, which, wow.
For an It'll eyelash. Be a while. I won't have eyelashes by the time I get off that waiting list.
There's the Ordinary AHA 30% BHA 2% Peeling Lotion. I have heard of this one. The Ordinary product gets talked about a lot. And at $7, it seems like a pretty good deal. New Face Advanced Facial Toning Kit. This one looks goofy.
I can't get behind this device. It just looks too weird for me.
Well, the microcurrent notion and all that, I don't think microcurrent at home stuff has been demonstrated to have much benefit. Certainly not as good as like Botox, but
no.
Go figure. They get people to buy it. We got two more, I think. The Illa Supreme Serum Skin Tint SPF 40. Not 30. We're going up to 40. I guess this is mixing makeup with sunscreen, which during the pandemic...
My challenge with this product is you don't typically put that much foundation on your face to get that kind of coverage. So
That's
why that's great that they came out with this makeup product that's SPF 40. You're probably not getting that much protection.
Oh, and it's a Credo Beauty. Does that mean it must be using titanium dioxide, which could give a white tint to your skin, right? Next up, the Tatcha Rice Wash Skin Softening Cleanser, another cleanser.
I like this one.
This has rice milk in it. What, you've tried this one?
I like the way it performs. I don't like the way it smells. I don't really like Tatcha's fragrances, but their products are nice.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the challenge of fragrancing things, is to make them to everybody's taste, which is very difficult. And our final one of the year, Purell Advanced Hand Sanitizer Refreshing Gel.
Whoa.
Of course, everyone's talking about that one, yeah.
That's funny.
And there we go. There are the 13 most popular beauty products of 2020. We'll see what happens in 2021.
Well, I'll tell you what's happening in 2021, Perry. You might be upset by this. Tresemme is being sued. I know you always talk about having worked on the Tresemme brand. Have you heard of this big lawsuit they're in?
I have. Jeez, what's happening to my old brand? You know, in 2005, I had the most shampooed head in America, washing my hair 1,500 times in hopes of developing an improved Tresemme shampoo and conditioner product. So it still has a little, you know, I think they still use the skeleton of the product that I put together, based on the ingredient list anyway.
Did it make your hair fall out?
It did not make my hair fall out, you know, strangely
1,500 times getting shampooed on your head and your hair didn't fall out.
Did not fall out, no. So go figure. But this lawsuit seems to say something different.
Yeah.
There happened a class action lawsuit against the Tresemme Keratin Smooth Color Shampoo because the shampoo contains DMDM hydantoin, which is a formaldehyde donor preservative. And that was the one that we were using when I was formulating.
Formulating back in the early 90s, right?
Early 90s, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So this preservative has been around for such a long time. And my heartburn with this, you know, lawsuit piece going around is that people are reposting, oh my God, it's in my shampoo too, and shaming brands for using this preservative when you are A, just reposting information you're seeing on the internet. People are not fact checking it. They're not consulting scientists. They're not saying, hey, what is this? They're just assuming this product and all the other products are demons because it has this preservative. Now, this preservative has been around in the 90s when Perry was working, and it has...
And before that, so it's at least 40 years. You know, it's
been
around a while. Yeah.
It has literally multiple decades of safety data behind it. It is approved for use in almost every regulatory geography in the world because of its safety data. Brands like Tresemme, other big brands, a lot of brands using it, they have toxicologists on staff and they're reviewing the formulations with this preservative in it. And they're demonstrating the safety of this ingredient. So to say it's causing hair loss, I honestly don't think this will stand up in court. The safety data is just not there to demonstrate that when you properly formulate with this preservative and you use it within the safely recommended levels, which brands are doing, you cannot demonstrate that it's causing hair to fall out.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. There's a couple of ridiculous things I think about this. First is that they're going after DMDM, they're going specifically after Tresemme, whereas this preservative is used in dozens or even hundreds of hair products.
I would say thousands. It's used in thousands of products. Yeah.
Yeah, and if it was making hair fall out, it would be making the hair fall out in everybody's product, right? And that's not happening. So it's very curious that they're going after Tresemme specifically. But I think I have an idea of why that is. It turns out back in 2012, Unilever launched a product called Suave Professionals Keratin Infused Products, right? And that triggered the same kind of complaint from consumers. And at that time, rather than go to court, Unilever just settled. They settled the lawsuit. They took the product off the market. They settled the lawsuit for about $10.25 million. So in that alleged lawsuit, they suggested that it was the DMDM hydantoin in Suave that was causing a problem. That was not proved or anything, but rather than go to court and risk a big settlement, Unilever just said, hey, we're going to just settle this and let this make this go away. And then it went away. So fast forward a few years later, they say, oh, you're Unilever, you're Tresemme, and you have this keratin shampoo. Oh, you have DMD and hydantoin in that. Let's file a class action lawsuit against you. And there you go. You know, it's, wow. This isn't very well, it's not very well thought out. But on the other hand, you know, if you can get this to a jury, all the fear mongering about formaldehyde donors and carcinogens and, you know, just the way people are, they'll just reject science to stick it to the big guy, stick it to the big corporation. I could see that they might even settle this despite the fact that DMD and hydantoin is not making anybody's hair fall out.
No, and I almost don't even like the term formaldehyde donor because it scares people and gets them to think, wow, formaldehyde, that's a carcinogen, that's dangerous. It's all about dose in the poison, and more so the amount of formaldehyde released by this preservative when it's used within the levels that you're allowed to use it at has the amount of formaldehyde that you would have in a medium-sized pear or apple. Are you suing produce farmers because they're exposing you to formaldehyde? No. I mean, these are safe levels. They're permitted for use. Multiple decades of safety studies. Guess what? On animals. Guess what? On humans. It's just demonstrated to be safe. The other thing is, if you have taken part in the DMDM hydantoin frenzy, I would just ask, or maybe you have friends that have done it, just say, hey, you know what? Have you gotten the facts? Hey, have you talked to any experts in the field? Have you consulted a toxicologist or a cosmetic scientist? Then don't repost that stuff. It really just does damage for really no reason. And there are certain microorganisms that respond really well to this preservative. Burkholderia sabbatia is one of them, and that is a bacteria that for some reason is becoming prevalent within our water systems in the world, and it can proliferate in cosmetic products. Cosmetic products don't have to be sterile, so you need a preservative like DMDM hydantoin to keep your products safe from specific microorganisms.
Yeah, but if you read something about toxicology on TikTok, be sure to share that.
It's probably true.
I'm kidding.
Yeah,
shall we move on to some questions? Indeed.
Yeah.
Maybe another goal for the Beauty Brains this year: start a TikTok page.
Oh man.
Do you know any 11-year-olds who can tell you how to do it?
I know one.
All right. Let's move on to some questions.
Our first question comes to us from Abdullah. They ask, there are a lot of new shampoos in Asian countries claiming they reduce gray hair and restore its color back. The ingredients list is not written in most of them. Some of my friends have used it and it looks like they really make hair black again. My question is, what ingredients in this shampoo makes hair color black and how do they do it? Also, is it safe for hair? Here's an example of such a shampoo. The Just for Men Gray Reducing Hair Color Shampoo.
Yeah, the Just for Men Gray Reducing Color Shampoo. I've never tried this product because my hair, I haven't got much gray yet.
It's pretty good, yeah.
It's coming, yeah. It's coming, though, I'm sure.
Well, in this ingredient, it has water, disodium lauryl sulfosuccinate, desylglucoside, cetyl alcohol, glycol stearate, ethanolamine, which is an alkalizer in hair color, cocamidopropyl hydroxysaltane, guar hydroxypropyl trimonium chloride, sodium cocoyl isethionate.
All of those ingredients, except maybe the ethanolamine, although ethanolamine too, probably those you could find in pretty much any shampoo, or they're commonly found in shampoos. Yeah, so these are pretty much all the standard shampoo ingredients.
Right, and now we're going to move into some other ingredients. So we had our ethanolamine, which is an alkalizer in hair color. You need an alkaline environment for oxidation to take place and for the hair fiber to swell. The next ingredients are NN-bis 2-hydroxyethylphenylenediamine sulfate. That's a oxidative hair dye that you would find in a permanent hair color. Acetic acid.
And expertly said by you.
Aloe leaf juice. Chamomile extract. 1,2,4-trihydroxybenzene, which is a hair dye that has been in use since the 70s. cetyroglucoside, which is another surfactant, erythorbic acid and sodium sulfite. Those are antioxidants to prevent the hair color dyes from oxidizing. Phenoxyethanol, caprylglycol are preservatives. Ceramide ant panthenol and manganese sulfate, manganese being a progressive hair colorant. Paraaminophenol, which is another hair dye, sorbic acid, etrodronic acid, and fragrance. So essentially what we have here is a shampoo with oxidative hair color in it.
Wow, interesting. Now, you said something about, because normally when you're doing hair dyes, it's sold to you in two containers, and then you mix the containers together, and that's to prevent the dyes from, oxidizing too quickly while in storage. So how do they prevent that in this formula?
We have erythorbic acid and sodium sulfite. These are antioxidants. So they keep the dyes in an unreacted state. And when the dyes come in contact with the air and the erythorbic acid and sodium sulfite are consumed, they will start to develop and react together. So NN-bis-2-hydroxyethylphenylenediamine sulfate will combine with paraaminophenol or 1,2,4-trihydroxybenzene, and it will create this black color that you see on the hair. It's a little bit slow. It's not as fast as traditional hair color because you don't have hydrogen peroxide as an accelerant. And when I say not as fast, I mean, this is really like it takes a while. It's just like progressive hair color. It takes time to build up and accumulate on the hair. The one thing I don't like about this, aside from the fact it's not as effective as regular hair color, is that you do this at home in the shower and you're not wearing gloves. You're touching the shampoo with the hair dyes in it, and then it's being rinsed off down your skin. And people can be sensitive to hair dyes. They are known sensitizers. It's just like people are allergic to peanuts. Nuts are known sensitizers, these proteins in them. It's kind of the same thing. So you want to avoid as much skin contact with hair color as you can, in my professional opinion. And I just don't like that this shampoo can't do that. Now, I'm sure Just for Men has done all the safety studies that they need to, but for me, I would rather just get professional hair color or even boxed home hair color and have it done in 30 minutes and have it a really beautiful dimensional look.
So if you do use this, you recommend just sticking your head in like the sink rather than doing it in the whole shower, right?
Yeah, and wear gloves as well.
Right. Although, so you're in agreement that this actually does work.
Oh yeah, it really does work. It has hair color in it. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's restoring your body's own propensity to produce pigment again. It literally is just colorizing the hair on your head. That's it. It's not like restoring your ability to produce colorized hair. It's just
now,
hair color.
One other question. If I were using this and in the shower and it went down my chest here and it got on my chest hairs, would it change those from gray to black too?
They would get a little stained, yeah.
Oh.
Maybe.
There you go. There you go.
Or you could just use it on your chest hair, but...
And it makes
gross.
A good body wash, too. No, it doesn't make
don't
a good
do
body
that.
Wash.
Do not do that.
It's a bad body wash.
And do not use this as a hand wash. I know we're covering a question like that later.
Coming up soon. All right, let's move on to our next question. This one comes to us from Mitsuku. She says, "Dear Beauty Brains, my shampoo is unscented, so my hair smells after a few hours. So I'm trying to spray perfume on my hair. Can I hear the answer to what experts like you think about putting perfume on your hair? I wear Chanel perfume. Is that okay?"
If you can afford it.
Is there any problem with spraying perfume in your hair? I mean, I don't think so. Perfume is made up of, probably mostly oily materials that are also volatile. It's going to be a range of things, and it all depends. Every fragrance is a little bit different, but the materials are generally nonpolar, but they are volatile. So over time, they're going to evaporate off your hair. I think when you spray the odor molecules onto your hair, you're not necessarily going to get the same scent profile as you might get from if it's put on your skin, because it's going to interact with your skin in ways that are a little bit different than your hair. But I imagine it might smell close enough too. So, but the bottom line is, yeah, I don't think there's any problem with spraying your hair with perfume. It just makes it a little dirtier,
we call that,
I guess, for
a hobo shower where I come from.
Really? That's Ohio, yeah. Right?
Yeah, a hobo shower is just where you spritz your hair with perfume and clean yourself up, you know, and your body. Yeah.
Is hobo still a like a politically correct term to use? I don't know.
You know, I don't know. That's just what we called it growing up. You know, and my Twitter profile is super old, by the way. I've had Twitter for over a decade, back when it first launched, and I have the word hobo.
The
but I, you know,
that's right.
Is hobo a bad word?
No, actually, I heard, I was listening to some other podcast and the term hobo came up and they were talking about the word origin, but it was something like Homeward Bound Boys is what that came from, something like that. I don't know. Fascinating.
Yeah, I don't want to say I trust Google, but, you know, they say 95% of people interchange hobo and homeless person. It can be taken negatively, but somebody says, according to my great-great-grandfather, who spent part of his life as a hobo, no, he refused to be called a bummer tramp, saying a tramp won't work, but a hobo will.
All right. Well, there you go.
Well, anyway, we called it a hobo shower. I don't mean to offend anybody with that. Sorry.
No. Well, I've taken no offense, and I hope nobody else has, but all you can know is that, yes, it's okay to spray perfume on your hair. It's just kind of an expensive way to get your hair it's an expensive way to get your hair smell good. All right, how about our next question?
Our next question comes to us from Christina. Christina, a makeup artist, asks, certain color cosmetics will develop a darker orangey hue over the course of the wear, which some people refer to as oxidation. Is this an appropriate description of what's happening? Are there reactions with the skin or other cosmetic ingredients that could be causing a color cosmetic to darken with wear? Have you heard of this, Perry?
No, I have not heard of this. But, you know, I know, of course, sometimes cosmetics can change color, and oxidation is obviously what happens usually when things change color, but I don't know about that specifically in this case.
You know, I have heard this a lot on the internet, and over the years, I have spent a lot of time researching this just because, you know, in the reference textbooks I have, it's either not discussed or the conditions in which iron oxides, which are what the pigment, the colorant in cosmetics, they're made from different shades of iron oxides. They require really extreme conditions to change. They're very difficult to oxidize. And so I was always perplexed about why people think this if the conditions are extreme or if there's just no scientific literature on it. So I decided to consult the person that I think knows the most about cosmetic pigments in the world, and that is Jane Hollenberg.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So Jane Hollenberg has almost 50 years of experience with makeup pigments, and not just formulating with them, but really doing research with them. And so I emailed Dr. Hollenberg and I said, why can't I find this information on the internet? Why can't I find it in the book that you wrote? And she said, I don't talk about it in my book because it's not a thing.
What?
As simple as that. Yeah,
it says
yeah.
So, it says on the internet it's a thing.
But it's not a thing. Here's what's happening. So there's only a couple producers of iron oxides in the world. And all of the companies who sell iron oxides as ingredient suppliers to chemists, they're buying from these major producers if they're not a producer themselves. And they're creating different blends with them.
Yeah.
So with iron oxide, there's actually a form that is a little bit more on the bluer side. And then there's a form that's a little bit more on the yellow side. And then, of course, you have your yellow iron oxides and you have your black iron oxides and your titanium dioxide. And when you blend all of those together, you get varying shades of different skin tones.
In fact, you can make any skin tone by just blending those iron oxides in the appropriate levels.
Yeah. And depending what compounds are present in these iron oxides, both yellow and black iron oxides can start to oxidize, but the temperatures must be over 100 degrees Celsius. So that's almost boiling. And I don't think people's faces are boiling or their foundations are boiling. So
unless they're on mercury.
Yeah. Now, however, in certain formulations, black iron oxide can be sensitive to acids and it can cause a shift towards red. But typically your face is not creating those conditions for black iron oxide. And honestly, very little black iron oxide is used in formulations, like very little. So that's not the cause either.
You know, it can also be sensitive to being called a hobo. So,
So red iron oxide is stable to over 1,000 degrees Celsius. Also not happening on your face. Yeah.
That is not going to oxidize on your face, no.
Yeah, yeah. So what's happening is when people are seeing this shift toward orange, if it's not the pigments themselves oxidizing on your face during wear, what is happening? What is happening is red iron oxide is getting wetted with sebum. It's getting wetted with the oil from your skin. When you put iron oxides into a formulation, you have to wet them with some kind of agent that helps provide an even coating over the surface, helps disperse them into formulation more easily. It just helps them glide over the skin better, incorporate into the formulation better, better for stability. And what's happening is when you are sourcing these red iron oxides that are more on the orangey or more of like that yellowish side, when your sebum comes out and starts to wet it, it will actually shift to look more orangey than red. But when you use these darker, I don't want to say darker, more bluer, more maroon iron oxides, you're not going to get that shift back. So it's just really about the duration of your wear. When it's getting coated with sebum, when it's that more yellow iron oxide, the yellow will start to come out in that red iron oxide as you're wearing it, and yellow plus red is orange. So really it's on the brand to make sure when they're doing formulation that they're getting use studies and wear studies out of it to make sure that that phenomenon is not happening. But it really, at the end of the day, is just a supply issue. Oxidation is not occurring.
There's no chemical reaction going on. It's just strictly a physical change.
Yeah, pretty cool, huh? So all the people on Reddit can stop saying it's oxidation. Because the expert said it wasn't. And I was like, no wonder I couldn't find information.
That's okay. You know they won't. But hey, I kid Reddit. We love you guys. All right, yeah, we got time for one more question. Johan says, hi, Beauty Brains. Thank you for your hard work. My question is, can I consistently use body wash as a substitute for hand soap? And how is hand soap different from body wash? Love from Singapore. Singapore is a city I've always wanted to go to. It looks very fascinating. But, of course, in the days of COVID, you can't go anywhere.
It's beautiful, I've heard. Yeah.
Oh, yes, indeed. All right. Well, this is an interesting question. I guess, you know, if we just kind of cut to the chase. Yeah, of course you can use body wash as a hand soap. But since we've got some more time in the show, let's talk about why that is. So first, let's talk about what soap is supposed to do. So hand soap, it's meant to get the dirt and the germs off of your hands. And actually, it works as well to remove germs off of your hand as the hand sanitizers, to tell you the truth. And don't be fooled. You don't need to have antibacterial soap. That does not work as far as removing germs any better than just regular soap. So the way that soap works to remove stuff off your hands, we use surfactants. Surfactants are these molecules which are compatible with both oil and both water, and they're able to make oil and water combine into these structures we call micelles. That has led to that trend called micellar waters, but that's a little bit different. But anyway, it creates these micelles, and they rinse away with the rinse water. Now, how do body washes work? Well, body washes are meant to do the same things, just get the dirt and the germs off of your body. Your body being made up of yep. skin, the same as your hands, it's pretty much, it's going to work pretty much the same, right?
Yeah.
It turns out that the surfactants we use in body wash are pretty much the same kind of surfactants that you're going to use in hand washes.
Exactly. And pretty much really anything that's meant to wash something, in principle, it's all built on the same chemistry. It's surfactant chemistry. You can even use a really basic shampoo as a body wash or as a hand wash. And actually, I had to do that during COVID. On my Instagram, you'll see a picture of a Suave shampoo bottle. And it was very hard to get hand sanitizer. Not that I really use that anyway. And it was also very hard to get hand soap. And I was like, you know what? This huge bottle for 99 cents, and it pretty much is hand soap. I'm going to get it. And that's what I filled up my hand soap jars with.
Now, that isn't the Suave that was recalled by Unilever. And that's it.
You know what? Even if it was, the hairs did not fall off my fingers, so I'm okay.
Exactly.
And I didn't have any rashes or contact dermatitis, so I'm pretty good.
That does explain why you don't have any hair on the back of your knuckles anymore. No, it turns out that, yeah, the one difference is, like, hand soap might use... It's like soap is a bit different than body wash in that the surfactants are... I don't know, like sodium stearate or, potassium cocoate or something like that. These are old surfactants that, you know, were just naturally discovered. The problem with them is that they will react with hard water and form soap scum and things. And so that's why modern surfactants were developed to get rid of that problem. And that's why you use things like, sodium lauryl sulfate or those kinds of things, which have the same cleaning ability or better cleaning ability, but they don't leave that soap scum. But as far as how everything works, they all kind of work the same.
Exactly.
You know, when I was working on the VO5 brand, we wanted to launch a body wash, and all we did was we took VO5 shampoo. We changed the fragrance and the color, and we put it in a bottle, and then we changed a label, and it said body wash. And that was what we did for our first body
wash. And it works the same. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little harsher nowadays, but there we go. All right. Well, that is the inner workings of some of the cosmetic industry, as told to you by two cosmetic chemists. That's all we have time for. Thank you so much for listening.
If you get a chance, you can go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That will help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
And if you have a question, as we said in the beginning, just record it on your smartphone and then email it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. Or if you're part of Patreon, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe. Enter your question there, and we're going to answer that one before everybody else's.
Also, don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. And we have a Facebook page.
Which, our goal this year is to do better on social media. So, another goal for 2021.
Yeah.
I think we're going to hire an intern for that, huh?
Maybe, yeah. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Happy New Year, and remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone.
Meow.
Kittens.